as I drive from community to community, I am seeing that we are the ones that are inundated.
Advocates meeting.
And saturated with these 5G towers and kiosks.
Thank you, Reverend Thorpes. Antonella.
Yes, I'm environmental, well, my name is Antonella DiSaverio, environmental chair of and sanitation committee of Community Board 1. We've had a committee meeting on this topic, and we had an Astoria resident that actually spoke about the health implications and documented health problems that he suffered as a result of the 5G device in front of his house. And so that warranted a discussion where we had experts from in addition to Odette on the as an attorney on the tech side, we also had Ken Chamberlain, a professor who specializes in this area and was on a commission to study this, and it was put forth by legislation in a state, and then we also had Theodora Scarato from the Environmental Health Trust speak on this topic. And the conclusion that we came to is that this device, these devices are not safe, and that we need further discussion before these Link New York City 5G devices are placed, or any other 5G devices are placed in the area. Thank you.
Yes, and also David, I did send to you just about an hour before the meeting a synopsis, just a quick overview of all of the community boards who are in opposition already, who are on record. There are about 9 or 10 of them, and there are more who are now deliberating the issue. I've also included copies of the resolutions or the letters of disapproval from many of these community boards. And hopefully this Astoria resident will be with us here, and I'll call him out. George, are you here? Okay, Michelle Birnbaum.
Thank you, Odette, and thank you everybody for holding this meeting. I'm Michelle Birnbaum. I'm the liaison to our group from CB8 Manhattan. Our community board had passed 2 unanimous resolutions in opposition to these towers. One was from our transportation, it originated in our transportation committee, went to the full board in opposition to the towers for many reasons, including notification and health reasons. And we also had a unanimous resolution from our landmarks committee, because our feeling is that these unsightly poles do not belong in historic districts. So we are also very concerned about the transparency of this program, why there were city contracts that were signed in advance of communities being notified and signed in advance of communities being able to comment on it. And when we saw presentations from the companies, we were not able to get the answers we wanted. We felt that they were not forthcoming in who their customers are, who they will be selling these pods to, whether or not there would be advertising on these pods, and why, in fact, they were not necessarily installed in areas that really needed broadband service. We also are concerned that these towers are wireless and less efficient than feeding fiber optic cables, excuse me, inside of buildings where they're way more efficient and have no particular, there's no health threat to them. And we know that carriers such as Verizon have been doing that all along. So we're not understanding really what the duplication is, why this happened without community input, and why we're now put in a position of trying to be like on a treadmill playing catch up while these are being installed without regard to community input, community conversation, and community concerns, because as we speak today, these are being installed. This is a very big concern for us, and we think that we deserve a lot more explanation about why it's happening. Thank you very much. Appreciate your having this meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. Simeon.
Hello, I'm Simeon Bankoff. I'm a historic preservation consultant working with Carnegie Hill Neighbors, which also shares space with Michelle. Carnegie Hill Neighbors believes very strongly that these proposed 32-foot 5G towers are unnecessary, potentially illegal, and honestly, improperly put. We've got grave process problems with how they are being foisted on the city. We believe that they violate environmental reviews, and they are inappropriate, unnecessary, and truly meaningless. As Michelle and other people have mentioned, we already have the infrastructure to bring broadband, Wi-Fi, and 5G to the city. There's no reason for these to be promulgated. Thank you.
Thank you. And also, I just wanted to mention that the justification for the Link 5G towers is not to provide broadband service to the residents, is to provide broadband service for people who are moving around, who are visiting, who are tourists, who are on the street. And so that's basically what's been coming out in these community board meetings, that the Link 5G isn't even meant for people who are residents, because 5G doesn't penetrate concrete walls. It just doesn't, or brick walls. So it's not even meant for the service for the residents. So in terms of equity for those districts, that doesn't make any sense, because it's really meant to serve people outside, not inside the buildings. Okay, and next, Lo, are you on the call? Okay, Erica?
Yes, I'm a Harlem resident of Mount Morris Park, Marcus Garvey Park. They are slated to put three towers in our historical landmark district. So that's the first question. How are they able to get permission to put poles in our historically landmark district? That's the question. I'm going to start with that question first.
Okay, great. Thanks, Erica. Guy? Okay. Christine? Christina? For Micah? Oh, Chelsea for Micah. I'm so sorry.
That's okay. Hi, my name is Chelsea for Micah. I'm a resident at 520 East 90th Street. I am here representing and advocating for the removal of a pole top 5G structure that was put less than 10 feet outside of our building without any notice, no discussion. We have since heard from OTI that because of the complaints out of our building, that they will now go to community boards and ask for feedback prior to installation, but that was not given for the pole outside of our building, and we are basically just being told to live with it. It's less than 10 feet from my son's room. It was put up in October when he was 5 months old. He's now almost 10 months old, and we're just trying to get it removed because of the unknown health effects, the real estate detriments that it's going to do to our building, but mostly the unknown health effects and the fact that we were not given any notice at all.
Right, thank you. And I also just want to point out, in terms of the property values, and especially in equity districts, the federal agency HUD will not allow the Federal Housing Administration to give out loans for any homes that are within the fall zone of a tower. So if this is supposed to serve equity districts and they're so close to people's homes, it's going to devalue their homes. And that's not that becomes an environmental justice issue, because that means that they are going to lose equity in their homes. And that's covered in the white paper that I distributed earlier. All right, and who else is on the call? Oh, Theodora.
Hi, I'm Theodora Scarrato, Executive Director with Environmental Health Trust, and I just wanted to offer any, I work with scientists, I publish research along with other experts on the issue of the health issue, so I am available to answer any questions related to that, as well as the radio frequency radiation compliance issues, which are a real issue. We did sue the FCC related to this issue because the limits that we have, those FCC limits that everyone states their hands are tied regarding or that the city is deferring to, have not been updated since 1996. And they're based on short-term exposures, not long-term exposures, protection from long-term effects from those exposures. So that was with the U.S. Court of Appeals, D.C. Circuit. I am glad to answer any questions related to that. The one thing that I wanted to bring out, two things. One is that we wrote OTI requesting those RF compliance reports, and I apologize that I wasn't on earlier. This may have been addressed. Every installation should have the reports indicating whether the installation is compliant with FCC limits, and that report also would indicate how far the compliance zone is, meaning for every antenna compilation, there's a radiation level that actually exceeds FCC limits, that goes out, a plume that goes out, and we would be able to see how far does that go out, how many feet does that go out, and in addition, we could also see what will the levels be inside the building. So I want to just make a slight clarification. So for 5G, it uses low, mid, and high bands. That means that they're the bands we've always used that very much penetrate buildings. But there are also these millimeter waves which do not penetrate. It depends on the material, and it's a whole other subject, but they're not the same. However, as I understand it, just for clarity, those poles will have all of the bands on them, including the high bands, but also the lower bands. So they very much do penetrate into buildings when you look at the 4G frequencies and so forth. Now, one of the things that I've also asked for from the city is for every installation, and I believe everyone should have access to this information in the community, what are the types of antennas? What's the make and model of those antennas? What's the power of those antennas? Because it's really important in terms of understanding potential effects or FCC compliance and so forth. That's a transparency issue that is critical for communities. It is absolutely outrageous that that information is not being afforded to the people who are being exposed. Now, in other communities, we would have that easily. Where I am in Washington, D.C. area, actually I'm in Maryland, so I'm right outside of D.C., but the county posts all of that information. There's no, you don't have that information. That information, I just click, I get it. In fact, I'm on a listserv. You sign up with the county, and they will send you all the newly proposed sites. What are the antennas? What's the radiation? All of that. And that information should just be immediately provided for all. And I have not received from OTI any answers to any of my questions. I'm going to put in the chat a link to the letter, as well as a link to a briefing that we have on the science and health issues. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Theodora. Jay, are you on? Hey, you're up.
Microphone. Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. My name is Jay Sorid. I advocate for issues in East Flatbush and in Crown Heights, Brooklyn, and I'm a member of the Housing Committee at Community Board 9. I wanted to just bring up the point of ULURP, the question of whether or not ULURP, the city land review process in which the community is informed, was done correctly or not. There's a question, I couldn't find it, and I raised the issue as to whether or not these cell phone towers went through the ULURP procedure. One of the ways that you could find out is first question would be, is there a ULURP application number? Okay, I did a search under the zoning. I could not find a ULURP application number. ULURP, for those who are familiar or want to check it, it's the City Charter 197 CA. So there's a question, was there's an application number. Number two, part of the EULR procedure is the City Planning Commission issues a report. I did a search, I couldn't find any report. So there's a real question on the uniform land use procedure, whether it was done correctly. For those who look, you could also take a look in the city charter under section 363E2. That's the franchises. It says that if there's a certain provision in it saying if you don't want to go through EULR, there may be a way in which, but the city planning has to issue a statement on the land use impacts. So there's some real questions as to whether this has to go through EULR. And when you do the searches under the various applications, there's no evidence that this went through EULR back in 1994. And then there's another question as to whether the amendments which came in, there were two amendments, if there was a significant change, then you had to also do it EULR if there was a significant change. So there's some legal aspects about it. I would recommend to everybody, ask either the public advocate or whoever, was there ever a EULR application filed for the 1994? Did you need to do a subsequent EULR application for the amendments if there was a significant change? And according to Section 363 franchises, was there a land use impact and was there a statement by that? Just finishing, I'll just quickly say that franchises have to be awarded by an authorizing resolution of the City Council. Did this go to the City Council? Etc. So there's some serious legal questions on it, and I hope everybody would take a look at the EULR 363, 197, and ask the public advocate whether proper community input was given. And I'll just conclude this with saying, if there's an issue, even though an article, I think it's Article 78, but if it wasn't done correctly, the EULR, and if there's a statute of limitations of 4 months. I believe it's an Article 78 procedure. There's a way of getting around it with what's called equitable tolling. So there's hope out there, and I'll just throw that out to you to investigate. Thank you very much. Great.
Thank you very much. Jay, if you can, is it possible to put together a little summary of that for the Public Advocate's Office? That would be great, and then they could follow up with the various sections and all that.
Sure.
Odetta?
Sure.
Yeah. Oh, Carlene, did you have a question?
I just wanted to add on to what Jay was asking. They did admit in our Community Board 12 meeting that they did not do the EULR process, and we have that recording. They did not do the process, and that is why now they are coming to us, because they had not done this in the past. They admitted that they were told to stop until they do this as they come out. In regards to, it's very interesting. In some of your meetings, they said it's for the folks who are in transportation. In our meeting, it was a conversation of, because you're in such a deprived community, you have to have this. And then they also stated that they did a what was it, Odetta? That they went around and they did a not a summary, but they. I can't, the word is, they did a survey. Yes, pardon me, brain fog. They did a survey. So the question was, who asked you for the survey and where did you go? They never answered those questions because we did not ask for a survey. We did not ask for a survey. And our issue was not that there was no Wi-Fi in the community, because there's Wi-Fi in the community. The issue is our kids that were living in shelters and in NYCHA housing did not have equipment, laptops, etc., for during COVID. That was our issue. It's not that we don't have Wi-Fi. And this conversation, as I stated before, began with downtown Jamaica. We were supposed to have Wi-Fi in downtown Jamaica for people while they're on Jamaica Avenue. This is how this conversation began back in 2020 or 2019, 2018. Thank you.
Well, there we go, Jay. Okay, I can't see who the others are, so please just take turns introducing yourself. Who has not introduced themselves?
Hello, Kareem, Community Board 12.
Okay. And you're in Queens? Queens Community Board 12, Bilal?
Yes, he is.
Okay, fantastic. All right. Next.
I am Yvonne Reddick, district manager for Board 12.
Also Queens Community Board 12. Thank you, Ms. Reddick.
Hi, good afternoon. Renee Hill, Queens Community Board 12.
Right. Thank you,
Renee. Hi, good afternoon. Celeste James, Queens Community Board 12.
Thank you. Who's next? Well, I think we're, let me see, Sue Peters, are you on?
Latoya LeGrand from Community Board 12.
Okay, fantastic, thank you.
Kyrie is also on here from Community Board 12.
Thank you. And is Sue Peters on? Jill McManus? Julie? All right.
Jill McManus.
Okay, and good.
Hey.
Could you hear that?
Yeah, Jill McManus from Community, a constituent of Community Board 8 in Manhattan.
Right.
Hi. Colleen, this is Andrea Scarborough. Should I be on the call? It sounds like it's just folks.
No.
Members of the community.
No. You can be here.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Ms. Scarborough is a member of QSWAP. Ms. Scarborough, can you tell them?
Hi, Andrea Scarborough. I am the vice chair of the Queens Solid Waste Advisory Board. We are the advisory board to borough president on solid waste issues. So environmental issues do come up and is spoken of at our board. I was texted that this was going on. It was kind of short notice, but it was something I was interested in listening in on. So here I am. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you. Who's next? Okay, so hearing.
I have a question.
Yes.
I'm listening to Jay and regarding the EULA process.
Yes.
If this is supposed to have gone through the EULA process and it did not, if we find that it was supposed to have gone through the EULA process, in which it did not, be removed.
Okay, which it did not.
What's been installed could be removed.
Yes, thank you, Ms. Reddick. Okay, so is there anybody else who's introducing themselves? Who hasn't introduced themselves?
Odetta, her question was, if it did not go through the EULA process, can those towers be removed? Can those?
I'm so sorry. Well, that's a very good question. It didn't go through a lot of processes, and they should be removed because just from that alone. I'm not sure what the remedy is on that, but certainly that is one among other things that we're bringing up here. So, David, we don't know, you know, there's been a lot of things that have been overlooked and a lack of transparency. So let me just summarize then. There's been no meaningful input on the Link 5G towers, and they started construction before even asking for community input. Now they're getting community input primarily because of the Public Design Commission's requirement that they go back and get community input. However, what they're doing is they're going to community boards and they're asking, where do you want these sited? That's not the only input that the Public Design Commission was asking them to do. They were asking them to get input from the community. There was nothing exclusive about it, but that's all that they seem to be interested in, but that's not what the Public Design Commission directed them to do. It was a bit broader than that. And also a lot of the communities, including the equity districts, those have been, that have been designated equity districts, they don't want them and they don't need them. And there's a bit of noblesse oblige, as if, you know, we know best what's good for you, without really getting meaningful community input. Now, OTI has been claiming that there's a need because of a gap in service and the need for added capacity for future demand. But when we asked for records, when the community boards asked for what the records were, what the evidence was, they could not produce any evidence. There's been no transparency on how they came to that decision. They just said that the telecom companies have told them that that's where they need to put added capacity or where there's a gap in service. Well, that's not sufficient. They have to provide evidence. And there's actually a case in New York that was decided last year, and it was Extenet versus the Village of Flower Hill, where the federal court decided that asking for access to wireless infrastructure for future capacity is not protected under the Federal Telecommunications Act. And they seem to be taking a stance where there's, as if there's federal imprimatur or federal preemption to be able to come into a neighborhood and say, you need this, and therefore, from under federal law, we can put this in here. They cannot. In New York jurisdictions, for under federal law, they cannot come in and put in wireless services without showing evidence that there is a need and that there's a gap in service. And they also have to use the least intrusive means possible. So here there's no record of a gap in service, and they're using the most intrusive means possible because they're putting them right outside people's homes. Now also, Theodora had mentioned that she has asked OTI for a lot of information. We have foiled OTI all the way back in October of 2021 to ask them, what kind of antennas are you using? What is the strength of the antennas? What is the frequency? What's the bandwidth that you're going to be operating in? And many other related questions. They've just given them perpetual extensions. And Theodore is correct. Link 5G is going to have a number of other frequencies which will be able to penetrate through buildings, but you don't need Link 5G cell towers in order to do that. You can do that through the regular wireless infrastructure that we have, because 4G and 3G actually carry much, much farther than 5G does. So it really obviates the need for 5G. And again, the justification has been, well, when people are walking on the streets or if there's people visiting or tourists, they need access. Well, you know, these are going to be 10.6, these can be as close as 10.6 feet from people's windows. And it's already affecting people's health and their safety. And it's like secondhand smoke, you know, where other people can enjoy it, but you're actually putting others at risk. There also have been a couple of other cases where the FCC lost on environmental grounds and also on its FCC emission limits. And the Environmental Health Trust won a case against the FCC in which the FCC was determined not to have reviewed its outdated 1996 emission limits, because they didn't take into consideration the thousands of pages of scientific studies showing harm below those limits. And then there was also, they also lost a case, the FCC lost a case, the United Katoa Tribe of Indians, when the court determined that they, that the FCC did not do an environmental review required under federal law, and instead gave 5G a categorical exemption. So what is being done here overall is that there needs to be appropriate review locally and federally, but what's happening is that everyone's doing away with regulatory requirements to deploy this wireless infrastructure, and the city and industry sees these as barriers, but these are actually meant to be protective of the public for their public health and safety. So, and the other thing is that it's supposed to bridge the digital divide. That's the choice word by OTI and CityBridge. The problem is that the digital divide, according to the United States Government Accountability Office, is not going to be remedied by 5G and will probably exacerbate it. And the digital inclusion the National Digital Inclusion Alliance testified in Congress in 2020, and they said, well, if this is supposed to be for equity districts, then how is anyone going to be able to afford a 5G phone? And what about upgrades to the phone? So they didn't think that this was going to remedy the digital divide either. And in many instances, what has happened is that the carriers have put in fiber infrastructure, and they've put them into the wealthier communities and bypassing some of the districts now that are equity districts. And the best service possible is fiber optics, and that is exactly what the federal government has prioritized. In Biden's infrastructure program, they have prioritized fiber to the premises, not wireless. And as Tom Wheeler, the former FCC chair, said that wireless should be a last resort and the United States should have a fiber-first policy. And apparently the NTIA, the federal agency, has adopted that. And that's what we should be adopting. And furthermore, Chattanooga, Tennessee, of all places, has the fastest internet service in the United States. And that's Chattanooga, and that's because they had a fiber build out to the premises. Why can't we have that in New York City? So I will conclude with that. And I don't know if you have any questions, David, or if anybody else has not introduced themselves, George or Lo, if you want to introduce yourself. Oh, Tara.
Hey, hello. I'm not walking my dog, and I wish I could turn my camera around. I think I can. I really don't like this Google feature, by the way, because it won't let me change my name. I'm from Community Board 9, and our community board has been... We don't know if they got the notices or not, and somebody's doing a... We're trying to find out what happened. But let me see if I could turn my camera around. Ooh, don't do that. I'm with my dog, so... See, this is one of the towers by my house. Can you see it?
Very vaguely.
Let me see. You know how to turn the camera around? I found it. Okay, there.
Okay, we can't really...
There it is.
Oh, there it is. There it is. It's on the corner.
Could you take pictures of that, please, when we're done with this?
Yeah, could you take a picture of that, Tara?
Yeah, I'll take a picture, but this is really close to my house. There's another one nearby. But then you can see, this is where the tower is. This is where the people live. And this is Ebbets Field, is a large... This is Medgar Evers College over there. And this is Ebbets Field on the corner of Montgomery and Bedford.
Yes.
And they just did this. They dug this up. There was a big hole this weekend. They must have just put in the wiring to this tower.
Oh, Jesus.
So you see how close it is to where these people live?
Yes. Thank you very much, Tara. We're going to open it up now for questions because David wants to open it up for questions for the staff.
All right. I just wanted to show everyone since I happen to be here.
Thank you. And please take a picture of it.
Okay. I already did. But I'll take a picture.
Thank you.
Bye.
Wow.
Okay, David. It's...
Oh, hey. Thank you for that very informative presentation. I believe Kashif has some questions. Yeah, Kashif just raised his hand.
Yes, thank you so much for that presentation and sharing the documentations with our office and definitely our multi-wheelhouse portfolio teams, including policy here and the IT team. We'll take a review of that and take a look into it. There's a couple of things that I just wanted to ask that's come to my mind. Have you guys considered bringing in an independent body of scientists to conduct some kind of a research on these towers and kind of like, you know, gathering some kind of like, you know, initial data on emissions and other issues both health-related and tech-related. One, that's one question. Second thing is, it's really good to see that many community boards are voicing the similar or the same concerns. And have you considered reaching out to all the community boards across New York City? Because obviously this is going to be a giant network impacting every community board. And lastly, just wanted to know if you need, if you can, for our office, give us like top three concerns with this whole issue. The top three, that will be very helpful for us to get started on something.
Yes, Theodore is going to talk about the health, but I just want to let you know that we are contacting as many community boards as possible, commenting, presenting, and getting feedback from the community boards as much as possible, because this has not been publicized in the news. Yes, and Theodora.
I would just like to add, so I work with scientists who are the scientists working on this around the world. We can't do two things. One, we don't want to, we're not going to engage in an experiment with people, although we do feel that there should be health surveillance studies done. However, if we were to opine on what is the, what are the health issues related to the levels of radiation or the types of radiation that are coming out of these towers, we don't have that information. That's why our letter, which I put in the chat that you can download to OTI, is so important. Without knowing what it is and what the power is, there is no information that can be gathered on that. It is the one of the most critical things that we need in order to discuss what do the studies say related to these levels, what do the studies say related to these frequencies, and so forth.
Thank you. Now, Michelle has a question or comment.
Yeah, sorry about that. Is Kashif with government?
Yes, Michelle.
Okay, sir. With all due respect, all of the studies that you are suggesting that we do, I would like to say that that would be a job for government, that government should have all their ducks in a row. You should have all of the stats. You should have done all of the studies. You should know the kind of equipment that's going up. And I don't think it's the community's job to try to present evidence about why you should not be doing something after the fact that you initiated doing something without having all the evidence. So to me, with all due respect, that's a little bit of circular reasoning. And in fact, I, for one, and maybe many on this call, would like to that you halt this program. You have a moratorium on it. You stop your installations until you get all of the information that you need after having done your due diligence and your research, and put a moratorium on the contracts and everything else that has to do with this project. For me, the purpose of this meeting was to, my purpose, I don't know what anybody else's was, but was to apprise you of all concerns, and but to also let you know that it's not just the concerns of the community happening after the fact, it's the concerns of the community that such a thing could be implemented with so little information and so little investigation on the part of government. So I suggest that you guys have to go back to the drawing board and get the information that you need. And in the meantime, don't subject the rest of us to the results of poor investigation and poor management. So I strongly suggest a moratorium on this project until you get additional information.
Right. That or a class action suit, one or the other.
I'd like to speak.
Yeah, Erica, go ahead.
Yes, so I'm going to raise a couple concerns, and from your response, I do agree with Michelle wholeheartedly. So the public advocate also serves as an ombudsman for the city government, providing oversight for city agencies, investigating citizens' complaints about city services, and making proposals to address perceived shortcomings or failures of those services. And nowhere in that definition does it say the community needs to provide that. The community needs to go to other community boards and apprise them of something. So I want to know what the definition and the purpose of this particular office is, because if we're not supposed to have the conversation with you, but it sounds like we do from the definition, I'd like to get some clarification on that.
Sure. Is there anybody else that wants to also share their thoughts before I respond?
To that question, then I want to share something else, another concern that was not raised, but answer that question first, and then I want to ask another question.
Odetta, please remember to bring in the part about the doctor.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much. No, first and foremost, we're not asking anybody to do any research or do any due diligence. We're just asking if there's anything that was done by the public or the advocacy groups or the research groups that you can share with us. We can definitely, as you mentioned, the definition, I put in a link for everybody to understand what the office responsibilities are and how we serve, and it's available on our website. We try to gather as much information as you can provide us, so we have something to talk to administration about, to talk to the agencies about, and we can provide something with the knowledge of what your investigations are, what your directions are, and how you are organizing, with this particular issue. So as more information we have, the better it will serve us to talk to the administration and provide some evidence, ask certain questions that need to be asked, and have them provide the answers back to us and back to the public. We will do what are we required to do as part of the office. The question was posed to see if there is anything that was done, not that it's required. So I just want to clarify the distinction between the two. And the second thing is, we are just listening to everything that you have already and all the community boards are going through, so we can put something together. This is why we have the policy team here. We have the IT team here, so we can bring all the knowledgeable people within our office to gather as much information as we can.
So thank you, Kashif. Reverend Thorpe, did you want to talk about the professor who they brought to the meeting?
I wasn't finished with that, though. I was not finished.
Well, Erica, okay.
I need to finish, okay? So okay. I hear your understanding of what you think it is, but these towers affect you, too. So if you live in New York City, one tower is too many. From what I understand, when I came into this conversation, I went to a community board meeting and was presented a lot of information, but I wasn't given all the information, and I was given misinformation. But I did get this. There's a lot of money going on here. And when you look at the moral compass of a city, you look at the budget. And I understand, I looked at the amendment. I looked at the franchise agreement. $35 million is projected for this project. And it's going to go from to 2030. Okay, I also looked at the amendment and I saw that Harlem wasn't even on the table. There was CB3, CB12. So how did District Community Board 10 and 11 get on the table? Okay, but there's some money going on. But let's talk about the security and my problem. My problem is that you have in a hearing, Jennifer Gutierrez asked questions, very good questions. One, about the privacy. How is this secure? So let's talk about this. Let's go through this. You have to have an email address to access the system. If you do not have an email address, you cannot access the system. And you can't opt out. There's no option out. You can provide, however, a fake email address, but they don't validate the email address. So who do you know that when you want to know who's really on a call or they're going to send you something, always give you a verification, even for TikTok or for any other app you get, there's a verification process. There is none on this. Also, there was a testimony from the differently abled community. They've been in this contract with City Bridge for 10 years. And they were supposed to be in charge of making sure that they had accessibility. They have not had accessibility. They were supposed to maintain the accessibility, and they have been left out the conversation. Let's go into the cameras and the footage. These towers will have up to three cameras in them, and they will take footage for 7 days. And they say the footage is because we're looking for vandalism. Well, the towers here will be in walking distance right outside my door. You're going to get a lot of footage of me. We can just do the Erica Ewing show. Because it starts in 7 days. They say they get rid of it because there's no vandalism. And then now the 7 days is going to start. So you're going to just see a whole show. Me just walking around, me doing this, me talking. I don't like being surveyed. Other thing is, who has access to the tapes? City Bridge does. And City Bridge can be subpoenaed by a government agency if they think that they need to be subpoenaed. And they will turn them over. And when asked about, does this include ICE? There was no response. When asked, what do you do with the email addresses? This is where the convolution starts. So City Bridge keeps your email under an encrypted file. However, they will contact you to ask you how your service was. It also came out in the reports that 50% of the kiosks are being used by tourists, not the people in the community, not the people that you say you need to serve. They don't want to go near those things, okay? So 50% are tourists, and the infrastructure that you put in, you know, we know it has to run on the fiber. That's what you're using. So now you're knocking on all these doors in Harlem saying we got to come in there and give you that free fiber that we owe you. But you know what? You need it because you need it in order to run these three towers that you're running all within blocks of each other. We're not going to be deceived, okay? But the fact that you don't know about this and you live in this community, that is very, very disheartening or disingenuous. Which one is it? So I'm not going to speak anymore because I have so many things to say about this plan. It's $35 million. And I did look into the cell tower leasing business. They've been calling me, asking me, do I want to buy a tower? I wonder why. I just put in, yeah, I want to buy a tower. I want to buy a cell tower. They're giving me all kinds of ads and advertisements. They obviously looked at my address. They know something's coming here. Why are they going to give me, little old me? Anybody can invest in the cell tower industry. And the cell tower industry is for the telecommunications and wireless companies to make money. And then what are they going to do? They're going to say your products don't align. Do you know that the complaints for 311, this is a public advocate's office, you should have got that, was that they are slow. So if I'm going to be in an emergency situation, someone's following me down the street, I got to now put in my email to get in, to get access to Wi-Fi. They're going to hit me in the head. I'll be dead by then. Okay? And nobody using no kiosk to put no email. I have no time for that. Okay? So that's not helping the community. Okay? And then put that on top of the fact that they're slow. And what do they say? Will the 5G networks make it improve the services, the speed? No. You can't stop me here. Because guess what? This is where I'm saying. You don't know this information, and it's public knowledge. This is not rocket science. And the fact that you don't know about this issue, I said again, disheartening or disingenuous. We can go on and on. We are trying to defend something that we didn't ask for. That is totally environmental racism. 101.
Thank you, everyone, for something that I didn't ask for.
So guess what? You all, to me, need to be on it because it's going to affect you too. One tower is too many. Thank you, Erica.
I just want to point out that the privacy issues that Erica pointed out were also identified by the ACLU, by the New York Civil Liberties Union, back a few years ago with respect to the Link NYC kiosks, and now it's the same thing for the Link 5G. And as a matter of fact, when I reviewed the privacy policy. For City Bridge, for the Link 5G, it said that they do not support a do not track function. So,
Ms. Wilkins, I'm sorry. There's a few of us might have to go to a meeting in like 3 minutes, so I just wanted to
please.
Solomon, Kashif, is there any, David, is there any last minute things?
I would just, you know, like to say that, well, thank you for all of, you know, what you've talked about. We are going to go, you know, our first step in anything is first to talk to the community, which is what we're doing now. Then we go back, we evaluate, we analyze, we do, you know, research. And then we go, you know, discuss the next steps and next actions. So yeah, that's our first step in our job, to talk to the community. And I don't, does anyone have any questions?
My question would, this is Reverend Thors, my question would be, are you gonna put a cease and desist on OTI while you're investigating this?
Is there- we can't, in our office, like, we can't do that. That's like not part of our issue. We can advocate, and you know, we're going to all, you know, get together.
Well, let me put it to you differently. Will your office be advocating on behalf of the community to put a cease and desist on this? Will you be taking it up the food chain?
Carlene, this is what's going to happen. As I mentioned before, we
this
have...
This is Reverend Thors.
Yes, this we have a few departments that are representing here from our office. We're going to take all this information. We're also going to reach out to admin with specific questions regarding all the concerns and all the documents that are shared with us to see what response the admin first have. At the same time, we will devise our own course of action, what we need to do as an office on behalf of the community. If this needs to be escalated, that will come from the recommendations of all departments that are involved here, from IT, from policy, from the health equity and justice team, and our team, infrastructure and environmental justice team. So as you know, David was mentioning, this is our first conversation with a broader group. We have received some documents before, and there's some good links that I'm just, as everybody was talking, I was kind of like eyeballing them. So we're gonna review that.
And
please, Odette, continue to send any other information that you may have. They may be helpful to this conversation.
Okay, that's fantastic. One last thing we wanna ask of you is that they hold hearings. Does the city council hold public hearings on this? And that is Jennifer Gutierrez's committee on technology. There have been no hearings on, no public hearings in the city council from the community on this. There needs to be public hearings there. There needs to be public hearings in the city council itself as well. And so, and I know that Jay and Theodore just had a couple of questions. Jay?
I'm sorry. One other thing that we're going to have to do is we're going to have to talk to general counsel about some of these FOIL concerns and whether or not we could assist with FOILing, and because that according to the New York City Charter, the Office of the Public Advocate has certain powers relating to information and information gathering, so that our FOILs might be prioritized. So that would that's an avenue to explore. But I'd have to talk to general counsel about anything. I can't make anything declarative without.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. And I hope that this is going to be one of a number of meetings that we'll have. This is just an introductory meeting just to get you on board with some of the issues. But I think Jay had something.
Odetta, please speak on the doctor.
Okay.
I can move.
Yes, Jay. Jay,
yes. Go ahead. Can you hear me? Okay, yes, very quickly. Many private law firms volunteer for the public advocate. The biggest and the best law firms in New York City, it's an honor for them to volunteer their services. So perhaps, I know the public advocate has lawyers, there's also private law firms, the biggest and the top in Manhattan, that volunteer. Perhaps if they could look at just the issue, Section 197, was ULURP followed in 2014 and the subsequent amendments? Checking out 197 and also checking out 363 and confirming, yes, ULURP was filed in 2014 and ULURP was filed with the subsequent amendments. 197C and Section 363 are at least two of the relevant provisions, and that basically is a community information and community review.
Thank you, Theodora.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out, I apologize, my daughter set off the fire alarm, so if I missed it, I'm sorry, but there's two issues I wanted to address that are happening with OTI, because I was looking at what the public advocates do. So first is that they're saying that they are pitching this as bridging the digital divide, as has been discussed, but I want to clarify, the antennas on top of the pole, all of those four, five tiers of antennas, the only thing that's free is the Wi-Fi.
All of the other things have nothing to do with bridging a digital divide. They are additional commercial cell installations that are not part of providing equity. In fact, and as is discussed, other systems can do that. The second thing is there's inaccurate information being put forward in these community board meetings. There was, for example, a person who was brought on and presented as a doctor, and he does have a PhD in physics. However, and I'll put the link to the Pittsfield, Massachusetts Board of Health, which looked at this issue and identified that over a dozen people had been injured by a cell tower installation. That Professor Swanson was brought in, and they didn't clarify what his level of his medical background was, which is not any medical background that I'm aware of, and also that he hasn't published on the health effects, the biological effects of radio frequency. He also presented the issue in a way that there were some inaccuracies presented and have been presented in several board meetings at this point. Now, I can outline exactly what they are and give you a point by point with the statement and the inaccurate facts, but this is like a part of the whole story that's happening here that I think could also be addressed. I think it's egregious to have the community being told things that are not the full facts or, in fact, are not facts.
It's a bit unprecedented. Thank you very much. Celeste.
Hi, good afternoon, all. I just have a question here. I'd like to know whether anything has happened up until now to stop the activity, to stop the engagement, or the turning on of any of the towers up until now, because if any have been stopped from activation or use, I think that we need to know what these other community boards did or other areas were able to do to get them to stop their usage before all of the studies are done. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. And as you see, David, people feel assaulted in their own homes. And this is really an assault in their own homes because it is an unwanted touching. It is an unwanted assault. Because these radio waves do affect biology, and people have been very seriously injured because of it. But to have them almost 10 feet away from people's windows is really egregious. And so people feel that they're going to be assaulted. And we're trying to protect, everyone's trying to protect their health and their safety. So with that, David, we would love to have another meeting where we can talk a little bit more about the issues. We just really skirted above some of these issues. And I'm sorry, Chelsea, did you say that you wanted to say something?
I was just going to say in response to Celeste that one of the towers in Washington Heights in Councilmember De La Rosa's district on 190th Street, that installation was stopped. And I know that they worked with the borough president's office to get that stopped. It was during construction, so the pole was not fully erected at that point. But I'm not sure who can reach out to Council Member De La Rosa's office to see, but just putting that out there. I'll put the article in the chat. There's an article about it.
Thank you. Celeste, did you have something to say? Because I think David wants to close the meeting.
No, just thank you.
Okay, thank you. David, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Any closing words, David?
No, we're going to take this back and talk amongst yourselves, and we'll reach out to you when we can.
Okay, yeah. Okay, that's fantastic. I'm sorry, can you take one more question by Andrea?
And we have taken notes.
Yes, hello?
Yeah,
Andrea here. It's really not for you, David. It's really more for Odette. I have just learned a whole lot this afternoon, and I think that it's information that would be helpful to be shared with the Clean Solid Waste Advisory Board. And just curious as to who can I contact that might be able to speak to our board around this issue.
Yeah, well, Theodora and I are available, and we can do it offline.
Okay. Yeah,
so we really do have to leave. I'm sorry. Yeah,
I'm sorry. David, as you see, everybody's very excited about this issue.
yeah, for sure. And it's an important one.
Thank you so much. Thank you to everybody in the Public Advocate's Office. We're very appreciative that you were here to listen to us. And thank you so much, David, for organizing this.
Thank you. Have a great rest of your day, and we'll get back to you.
Okay, thank you so much. Thank you. Okay, is there any way to copy the chat?
I copied most of it.
Dad, I can send it to you.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, Dad, how do I reach you? Through Colleen? Should I reach out to Colleen?
Yes, through Reverend Thorpe's my email.
Okay, awesome.
Okay, thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.